You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
Phones are not bad, and I think we all need to realise this. They're not bad, but we fear what we don't know. So as parents, we have to get on board and understand what they're doing, why they're using them, because they ain't going away, and they're actually extremely helpful. But to my point with driving a car, it's about knowing the good things about it and being wary of the bad things about it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Net Mums podcast. Wendy, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm marvelling in the fact that we've both decided to wear basically the same clothes today.
we've both come in stripes, haven't we?
It's the mum uniform, stripey Breton tops. Why? That's what you wear.
Mum uniform. I'm fascinated by this. It does feel like I've only worn a Breton top since becoming a mum, and now it is like my go-to. If I'm having a bit of a tired morning,
it is.
Jeans, stripes, it just works. So anyway, on to today's guest. Today, you will definitely recognise today's guest, whether it's from Celebs Go Dating, her brilliant podcast, Luana, or her gripping new show, The Affair with Anna Williamson. Yes, you've guessed it. It's Anna Williamson. She's also a qualified life coach and therapist, and she's now on Channel 4 hosting The Great British Phone Switch. Anna, a warm welcome to the Net Mums podcast. And you're not wearing stripes, I've got to say, so you're not in our gang.
Ladies, firstly, thank you for having me. I'm not wearing a Breton stripe. However, please keep me in the club, the mum club, because I am wearing gym kit, which I have absolutely no intention of using in an actual gym today.
We like
second
it.
Second mum uniform.
Yeah, exactly.
Right there.
I have literally thrown on, I've got my sweaty Betty leggings, my little top. I've even got a sports bra just because it's comfy. But let's be honest, I've got absolutely no intention of going to the gym today.
And our producer, may we just say, popped up this morning and we were all like, you look really, really smart. You've got a lovely top on. She kind of stood up. She was like, yeah, I'm in my gym shorts underneath. So it's the thing.
Can I just say, I mean, this is why, you know, thanks for having me on. It's so nice to chat to you ladies. And obviously, you know, we've been pals on and off as well, haven't we? And it's so nice just we're all in the same club. We're all faking it till we make it. Quite honestly, I don't think we're even faking it anymore. I think we're just quite happily embracing and accepting a lot of our life choices.
Yeah, but just the chaos,
isn't
it?
You're right.
Anna, first up, we have to wish you a belated happy birthday because it was yesterday, wasn't it?
It was.
But you were feeling unwell, weren't you? Did you still manage to enjoy yourself a little bit?
Yeah, do you know what I did? Isn't it just sod's law? Like, I don't know if... I'm a massive hypochondriac, by the way, just to put it out there. I overuse 111. But I don't know if I've had this horrible strain of COVID that's been going around or not. Probably not, if I'm honest with you. It's probably a little bit of hay fever, a little bit of a cold. But I woke up yesterday on my birthday and I was like, oh, of course it's my birthday. Of course I've turned 44 today. And I feel like absolute poo. My son couldn't be bothered to come upstairs to wish me a happy birthday. But my daughter made up for it by dancing into my room fully naked and sort of performing a birthday song on the bed for me. So, you know, we'll take that. No, I did enjoy it. Thank you.
Who doesn't love a naked birthday song? Honestly.
I mean, this is what a 5.5-year-old daughter does. And I'm really seeing the difference now between having a son who's 8 and a daughter who's 5. And my God, they are worlds apart.
It's mad, isn't it? Just that you raise them in the same way and then they still end up so different, don't they?
Totally.
It is absolutely bonkers. And it's amazing because we all, I think, enter motherhood. Well, maybe I'm generalising, thinking, what's this going to be like? You know, and everything you think it might be, it really isn't, for good and for bad, actually. And like yesterday, my kids, I'm not going to lie, were thoroughly irritating at times and just really trying to spoil my birthday. And then all it means and all it takes is one little thing and you go, oh, and your heart melts. And they were fighting constantly. They're in that stage now. They just fight all the time. Physically, like literally to the death.
Like lion cubs, just bundling
like
this.
It's just bundling and kicking and it's just all of that. And then my daughter suddenly goes, Mummy, can we do a Percy Pig treasure hunt for your birthday? I'll do it. And I was like, oh, you're really quite sweet. So, you know, it was harping back to the COVID days where it was go out for your daily walk. And I was like, any activity we can do. And I used to hide like Percy Pigs. Like around like where we live, and that was kind of the activity.
Do you remember
of the day.
The miniature duck thing in COVID? Did you guys do the miniature duck thing?
No, what's that?
No. So you could buy tiny little, teeny weeny little ducks, and you could buy them in kind of like 500s. And then you'd just hide them all around your house, and it would keep your kids entertained looking for these miniature ducks. But I swear to God, it's 2025, I'm still finding ducks.
Well, Alison looks like me. I missed the duck trend, and I would have had the duck trend.
Your children were too young, though, Alison.
Your twins. My eldest was like 8 or 9, I think, during... or yeah, she was like 9 during
But Anna,
COVID.
Your kids were probably too teeny-weeny.
Yeah.
To be chasing ducks around the house.
I had a newborn in COVID, which was pretty unfun. And then I had a 3.5-year-old. But do you remember... I don't know what I'm thinking. I remember we had the... did you get the pebble craze? Where all the kids, like where we live, would like decorate stones.
Decorating
and
pebbles.
And then hide them. And then you'd go on your family walk...
And find the Posca pebbles.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Can I just say we're already now talking kind of with, you know, rose-tinted glasses about the COVID days.
Nostalgia.
Gosh. Oh no, not here. There's nothing rosy.
Never.
No. So what I love about you, Anna, is that one minute you're chatting to celebs about who they want to cop off with. The next, you're talking really openly about your own mental health. Did you ever imagine you'd have this crazy varied career?
In a word, Wendy, no. And it's a really strange one because I've been doing sort of broadcasting, I guess, because I started out cutting my teeth, you know, as a TV presenter in kids' telly. So I've been doing it for over 25 years now. And as you say, I never... ever, no careers teacher or even parent trying to nurture me through, what are you going to do for a living, could ever have predicted where I would have ended up now. And I am so pleased with my career progression because it has been extremely varied, as you say. And I consider myself really having never worked a day in my life because everything I have done, I have just so passionately enjoyed. Don't get me wrong. Over the years, I've had some like pretty boring jobs. You know, I have grafted, you know, working in fast food chains and horrible temping jobs just to pay my rent. You know, whilst I was sort of seeking the dream of my sort of dream career. But to your point, no, because really how it all became sort of one big weird cocktail where I was in my mid-20s when I had a mental breakdown, the first of two. Which was pretty unfun, but actually weirdly became a real pivotal change in my life where I was seeking, you know, I sought therapy and sought help in my mid-20s and no one was talking about mental health back in, you know, the early 2000s when it happened. And I was also, and a huge part of my story around that is that I was in an abusive relationship, which at the time I also didn't recognise it was coercive control. I mean, again, we had none of this awareness and even legalities now, criminal prosecutions around it. So that really sparked a complete change in my career, but then weirdly ended up everything aligning again. So, you know, in a very, very long story short, over that sort of 16, 17 years, I then went to, and you'll find most therapists, a lot of counsellors, therapists, coaches come from lived experience, which is why they want to get into that change work, because you come from a... inside out, you can. I know what it feels like to genuinely not want to be here, you know, and that's pretty stark. I know what that feels like. I had it again when I had terrible postnatal depression. You know, it's the pits. But I also know that there are things that can be done to get better. So when I started to train and qualify in various different talking therapies, because then you get really interested in the whole thing. And I was like, oh my God, I'm really into neurolinguistic programming. Oh my God, I'm really into CBT. Oh my God, I became fascinated by psychology that I started training that. And then it all kind of came... sort of amalgamated in my work in TV. And then I started to do that work on the telly. And then, as you say, bringing it up to present day for the last 8 years, I've been, you know, one of the dating coaches on Celebs Go Dating, as well as a private practitioner, written self-help books, podcasts. So I sort of juggle a lot, as you know, and it's all a bit crazy and strange. But underpinning all of that, I just am me. And I think that sort of cuts through. I'm a little bit crazy, but I also have a great deal of depth as well. So it sort of depends on on where I choose to tune into it.
You mentioned there your experience of postnatal depression, and you've spoken about your experience with perinatal anxiety, but you didn't seek any help at the time, did you? Would you do that differently if you could go back in time?
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. I think this is why I'm so passionate about banging that drum now, and I think I will bang this drum until I'm dust, because it's the pits. And if anyone's listening to this now and thinks they might be experiencing postnatal depression or perinatal depression, anxiety, birth trauma, you know, all of those connected complex feelings, please don't feel like you're alone, because I know you feel like you're alone when you're in it, but you're really not. And yeah, I think looking back now, I feel so sorry for the Anna that had just given birth. Actually, I feel so sorry for the Anna that had just got pregnant, because my anxiety, I have generalized anxiety disorder. I was diagnosed when I'd had all this blow up in my mid-20s. And it's something I've managed very well. I manage it very well now. You kind of practice what you preach after a while. But getting pregnant and then ill-advised at the time to have come off my anxiety medication, a lot of people will listen and be aware of SSRIs, which is a typical medication for depression and anxiety. You might know the name sertraline, escitalopram, citalopram. There's many different versions. But I was ill-advised at the time to come off that cold turkey very quickly, but I didn't have any extra sort of signposting or psychological support. So my first pregnancy was really masked as hormones, but actually it was a raging anxiety disorder, which was out of control. And that pregnancy mentally was very tough. Physically, I've been very blessed. Both my pregnancies physically were fine, textbook. But when I got to birth and typically went late, you know, I went 42 weeks, I gave birth, you know, I was panic attacking all throughout birth. It was a terrible birth. Very long story short, you know, 40 hours, hemorrhages, you name it, forceps. And then that level of trauma I experienced after I'd had Enzo, my son, was something that I don't ever want to repeat. I don't ever want any woman to ever feel the depths of despair and disconnect that I felt in those first few months after giving birth. It was horrible, absolutely horrible. It was black and dark and horrible. It's what I think hell must feel like, you know. I think to your answer there, Wendy, I wish I'd been more transparent with my health visitors, with my midwife, with my husband, with my family.
And with yourself, probably.
With myself. And let me. And do you know what? I've talked about this once or twice before. There was one person, a couple of people actually, that really helped me out of those trenches in those initial couple of weeks. And I think sometimes, I think this is why the importance of having a therapist or a coach, someone that actually is quite disconnected to you and doesn't actually have any actually opinion on you as a family or as a person. Because one person, her name's Lucy, and I went to school with her when I was at primary school. Hadn't spoken to her in 20 years. And she happened to have given birth to her third child on the same day that I gave birth to my first child. And she reached out to me on Facebook, you know, oh, well, congratulations. That's crazy. We've had a baby on the same day. And for some reason, I offloaded to her and I was like, it's horrible. And she was amazing. And she really started to give me she just held me this, you know, through messaging. Like, she was amazing. And then also, and I know we all get a bit kind of jokey about this, but the NCT group, you know, I had joined NCT. What is this load of old shit?
But it goes one way or the other, NCT. They're either really helpful or really detrimental. There's no in between.
You're absolutely right. And we'd done all the classes, you know, it was like, you know, thrown together, aren't you, with this group of people. And it wasn't until we'd all given birth that we all, you know, the obligatory WhatsApp chat started at 3 a.m, you know, whilst we're all trying to feed. Those ladies, let me tell you, they saved me. Because suddenly, and I always remember it was one of them must have been about 10 days in, and it was like 3 a.m. I remember she messaged on the WhatsApp group and she was like, I'm just going to say it. Is anyone else finding this really hard and really boring? And I was like, these are my women. And I also just like to point out, I've slagged my kids off since I've come on this podcast. They are undoubtedly the best thing I've ever done. But it's also bloody hard. And yeah. I think it's okay to say that. Never have I loved something so much I've also hated in equal measures.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so with you. Now, you know, obviously you've been talking about how difficult those first few weeks and months were. And you've spoken before about how you struggled to bond with your son when he was born, that disconnect that you've just spoken about. Do you think that you've felt shame around that and around the fact that you hadn't enjoyed your pregnancy, which is, you know, a time that we're meant to be blooming and feeling blessed?
God, that word.
Yeah.
The blooming word.
Blooming and feeling blessed. And actually, you were just going through hell. Was shame a big part of why you didn't speak up, do you think?
Absolutely. I think you've completely encapsulated how I felt. Shame and embarrassed, actually. And I think that's... And this is why I think I feel so strongly as a therapist, you know, because no one asks to feel as they feel. They just feel. And I think we need to really suspend judgment around that. And you will probably find no person that suspends judgment more than me. It's why I do a lot of the projects that I do now. But absolutely, you know, I had a friend who was on a fourth round of IVF, you know, when I was getting pregnant with my son and giving birth. So I didn't dare open up the fact that how I was feeling, because I was like, God, shut up. Like, you know, you haven't had these struggles. But again, that doesn't and that shouldn't minimize how we feel in that moment, because, you know, I wasn't asking to sit there feeling depressed. You know, I wasn't being ungrateful by choice. You know, I wasn't being some bougie bitch. You know, I just felt hideous, you know. And shame. And I think if I'd heard one more person say to me, oh, you must be so happy, I would have probably punched them in the face, because again, it's people projecting their feelings, which I get. But I think in society and in life, we have to be very careful about how we project our own feelings and emotions and perceptions on a situation to others. Because in those moments, in those well-intended moments, I do not doubt, you create silence and shutdown. And the more small and silent someone feels, the more desperately that can unravel behind the scenes. I didn't dare tell anybody that how I was feeling, that I didn't feel a connection to my son, that I didn't know how to feel, that I felt claustrophobic. I remember my mother-in-law coming round just to give me, I said, I think I made up a reason that I had to go down to the local supermarket. And I remember she was like, that's okay, I'll watch the baby. And I remember driving to the local supermarket and just sitting and walking around the supermarket going, oh my God, I need to elongate this as long as I can. I don't want to go back. You know, it's a horrible feeling, because also I knew I wanted my son. My son was a planned for child. But it was frigging terrifying, because, you know, almost yourself, as you say, the shame, you say that, Alison, I'm like, what's wrong with me? What is wrong? Why are you not looking at your son like that woman is over there gooey and, you know, enjoying her Costa coffee with her friend? Why are you the one sitting here in the car crying your eyes out with your baby in the back of the car and you're wishing he'd just sort of shush? You know, it's a horrible feeling. And it's,
I remember, you know, doing that in a Sainsbury's car park.
Yeah,
I'd stopped on a car journey and was sat in a kind of like big Sainsbury's, just kind of like milk leaking and weeping. It's just a thing. But so much pressure, isn't there, for mums to have it all together, which isn't helped much by social media. And we were joking before we started recording about how we're recording this in the summer holidays and it's day two and you're already a bit like, okay. So what percentage of the time do you feel like you're nailing it, and what percentage of the time do you feel like it's all falling apart?
That's a really great question, actually. So me personally, I mean, firstly as well, we all just need to, I mean, and I speak as someone on Instagram by design, but it's a highlights reel. You know, you're not going to see me, which I was 3 days ago, standing in my utility room with the door closed, with my foot against it, trying to finish off a voice note to my manager about something urgent, and then secretly just doing the middle finger to the door, which was aimed at my children behind it. You know, it's a reality. I would say, I mean, I come at it, but then on the flip side, I mean, I joke about it, but I think we're all looking for that holy grail of balance. The way that I deal with it is I am very fortunate, you know, in that I'm a freelancer and I'm at a point in my career where I'm quite in control of my schedule, and I have a lot of people that I can sort of delegate out to. So I know that's a real privilege, and that's sort of 25 years of getting to that point. Not always works, but I can sort of dictate my time. No, I'm not really beholden to anybody else. Now, I know that's a privilege, because a lot of people aren't. We have bosses, they have colleagues, they can't just go, well, you know what, I'm not coming in today. You know, it doesn't work like that. I totally get that. But as much as I can, I prioritise the children always at the top of the list. So where are the children? What are they doing? Who's with them? You know, is that me? Are they happy in life in general? And then I sort of then will plan underneath that, you know. So that helps me enjoy motherhood. I wouldn't say I feel like I'm nailing it probably any of the time, but I think that in itself is a false expectation, because as my mother's always said to me, kids aren't robots. You know, they can be, you can have your sweetest child one second and then they turn into the devil incarnate the next. Stuff happens, you know, you can be, you know, 1 minute feeling like you're nailing it and then anything can happen, like a health thing. I had it recently, actually. I was filming Celebs Go Dating and it's always a testing time for my husband and I with the family, because it takes me away a little more. By design, I try and be quite present with the children for sort of school pickups and drop-offs as best I can, and I fit that around my work. But when I'm in series, that typically takes me out quite a lot, because we film quite long and quite hard for Celebs Go Dating. But I was in the middle of a scene in the agency, and my husband and I were just about doing the juggle, you know, with his work as well, with the kids. We're just about there. We got our support system in place with family members and stuff. And then the unexpected happens. My son got a phone call, that the phone call of doom when you see the school number on your phone. And I happened to have had my phone on me on set. I don't normally have phone on me on set. I think I'd had it there just because I needed to use it for a prop or something. And they phoned, and my son was deeply upset and distressed. He'd found a lump. And that's obviously terribly upsetting for anyone to hear. And I had to leave work immediately and take him to A&E, where it turns out he had a hernia. But, you know, in those moments, and I totally unraveled then from that day on, because it was like, we're just about nailing it. We're just about got our system in place. But at any point, anything can happen where it totally derails. And I didn't expect, in the middle of a series that I'm doing, that my son obviously comes first. He wanted mummy. He didn't want daddy. He wanted mama. He's quite very attached to me. The irony with his birth is, I think I've always tried to compensate with him, but we are extremely attached to each other. You know, and at that point, I felt like I'm so not nailing this. You know, I'm in A&E at 10 p.m. with my son, who's very distressed. I'm trying to figure out what to do with him. I've got to go to film in the morning. My team are being really great about that. But, I am so involved in that show that I've got to figure out how we're going to deal with this narrative. You know, so at that moment, I was like, oh, my God, I am failing at life, you know, failing at motherhood, failing at everything. But you know what? Tomorrow's a new day.
It really is. And you mentioned Celebs Go Dating. I want to ask, who's been your favourite celeb on the show? Because I personally would watch a whole series just dedicated to Pete Wicks.
Oh! I think everybody would, wouldn't it? Yeah. Maybe we just need to... Maybe I should just say to our team that, well, let's just do a Pete Wicks Goes Dating.
Yes, I would watch it.
Great idea.
And we'd do that. I mean, maybe, I mean, to be fair, I feel like we've done that several times on Celebs Go
you
Dating.
Have.
Could you do Pedro Pascal Goes Dating, please?
Okay, yeah, we'll make that happen too. Do you know what? Oh, I'm so blessed, really, because they're all brilliant, you know, and there's been hundreds now of celebrities that we've had over the time that I've been on the show, and this particular series, I mean, they're all amazing. I would say in particular, this series, I am so, so, so proud of Kerry Katona.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Oh, let me tell you, you are in for
We've had Kerry on the pod, so it'll be really interesting. Yes.
People, I think, and I thought this actually, when we said about Kerry coming on back on the show, because she was on my first series actually in 2018, it was a bit like, has Kerry, you know, what else has Kerry got to give? You know, because I think we've been through the ups and the downs. I've known Kerry for years in this industry as well. Let me just say, I couldn't love that girl more. You have never seen her in such a good place as you see her in this series. And again, she's a beacon of hope that after everything she's been through in her life, she is now stepping into what I believe is her absolute best time yet. And her journey this time in the agency is, it's going to smash ratings.
Amazing. I cannot wait
to see
that.
Exciting.
Now, Anna, you recently launched The Great British Phone Switch on Channel 4, which explores what happens when parents and kids switch phones. It is such a fascinating concept. Is smartphone use and social media something that scares you? Because you're getting to the age now, or your kids are getting to the age where you're probably starting to think about it, aren't you?
Well, this is why yes is the answer to that question. I think it is for everybody else. And it's by that very notion, which is why we launched The Great British Phone Switch. And it has been one of the most interesting TV projects I think I've ever done. And I'm really proud of it. And it's on available on Channel 4. So just stream it now. Great British Phone Switch. And we had four families made up of a parent, and a teen. And it's that, exactly that. We wanted to get to the heart of what is going on around phone usage, phone appetites, but also to help empower parents, to empower teens, but also to create connection, communication, because there's so much disconnect around it. And it's really scary as parents. And as you say, yeah, I mean, my 8-year-old, he's nearly 9 actually, I mean, he's already obsessed. Can I use your phone? Can I use your phone? Can I use your phone? You know, and there is so much for us to be wary of. And I always say the analogy is, you know, like a car. You wouldn't just give a 17-year-old a car and go, there you go, get in, off you go, drive it. You know, you teach them. You teach them how to drive a car. You teach them of what the dangers are, what they need to be aware of, where they need to be especially wary of some situations, some roads or, you know, whatever. They need to look out for dangers, but they also need to also enjoy it because it's fun, it's freedom, it's exciting. So I think that analogy is always quite a good one, in that you wouldn't just send them off out into the world in a car, you teach them how to use it. And it's exactly the same with phones and social media and the internet. And I always say, and this is as a children's counsellor, get on board with them. Ask, not tell. What do they want to watch? What do they want to play on? Why are they using social media? And what I loved about the Great British Phone Switch is that typically the parent and the teen came into us, and we had it was a closed experiment where they swapped phones for a whole weekend, and we then had them under surveillance to see how they would cope. And what was brilliant is that it sparked conversation, it sparked communication, it judgment started to shake up a little bit around that. And, you know, we had one guy, Luke and Isla. Luke was the dad, Isla was his 15-year-old daughter. Now, he came at it from a protective dad because he'd seen his daughter get bullied a bit online. So naturally, he's like, my ass, my rules, you ain't using a phone, you know. And I think we can identify with that. However, it's not that helpful when you've got a 15-year-old girl going, great, well, you know, she's going to use it anyway. Do you know what I mean? And actually, what was so lovely is that the dad got into her world, and she taught him what she was doing on lots of video editing and photo editing, the creative side, and he was blown away by how creative she was and how he's like, oh, you're so clever, you know, had no idea. And she also got into his world a bit to understand what he was using phones for and why he had a very different attitude to her. And at the end of the experiment, every single family came up with a pledge, which was essentially creating family usage in a healthy way. That phones are not bad, and I think we all need to realize this, they're not bad, but we fear what we don't know. So as parents, we have to get on board and understand what they're doing, why they're using them, because they ain't going away, and they're actually extremely helpful. But to my point with driving a car, it's about knowing the good things about it and being wary of the bad things about it.
We've also been loving your new podcast, The Affair. Why do you think we're all so fascinated by infidelity? And we, let's face it, judging by the reaction to the Coldplay kiss in the summer, we really are fascinated by infidelity.
Yeah. It was funny enough. That all happened, and I was like, goodness me, you know, this is sort of case in point. I've been working on this as a bit of a passion project, The Affair podcast, for about 18 months, 2 years, because it's a topic that really fascinates me from a relationship coach point of view. Now, to be very clear, I do not condone affairs. I do not glamorize affairs, but I am interested in affairs because, to your point, 1 in 5 people have an affair, which, and the very fact that the podcast just shot straight into the number one position in podcasting, that is absolutely nothing to do with my skill, I'm sure. It is down to the fascination around the topic. And what I wanted to do was bring my therapy room to the masses to help people understand, to get under, I'm all about prevention, early intervention, to understand that it is not one size fits all. And I think we all have this depiction of affairs being a certain way, you know, an illicit, sordid, Jilly Cooper-esque, grubby, exciting, you know, liaison, you know, which then creates mass destruction. It can. It really can. But there are so many other situations why people enter into affairs. It's not just about ego. It's not just about sex. And in fact, a lot of my research and a lot of the guests that I have on, it's actually emotional connection that is lacking in their lives. You've got people that are just opportunists. You've got some people that are avoidant and they're trying to block out stuff that's going on in their life. You know, and this is why I wanted to do it from the three perspectives that typically happen in an affair: the person having it, the other person, and the person that's been cheated on. And that's what I do, to get that context from men, from women, different demographics. And I think the Coldplay thing was really, really interesting. And that's a whole mess out there over there that we've seen unpack. And I feel sad for them. But why did we all become so obsessed by that viral video? Because we all saw the moment the affair was blown. And that plays into the scandal around an affair. But with my podcast, you know, I have some people that are just serial cheaters that are narcissistic. And I have that perspective. But I also have some other people. I have a woman on my series one whose husband was in palliative care. He was no longer conscious, had been for several, you know, she'd been through the mill. And she needed a release. And everyone in her family and, you know, disowned her, but she basically ended up having a sexual affair with somebody because she had spent 3 years, dealing with this devastating situation. And I'm not there to judge. None of my business. But what I am there to do is to bring these perspectives to light and just to help people understand that actually, maybe if I think of this in a different way, what is the nicest thing? I've had so many comments from people that have been on the receiving end of affairs, and or their parents have had affairs. You know, as a child, their parents had affairs. They've been affected by affairs, shall we say? And they've said, listening to this has somehow soothed a lot of the pain and because I've started to think that in a different way about it, not okaying it, but thinking that actually perhaps they weren't just a horrible narcissisty person. Actually, I think there was a lot else going on in their life, and it's helped them get some context around it, which essentially then brings about some healing.
That's really good. Do you think it's possible at all for someone to have an affair and then their original relationship ends up stronger because of it?
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time. I have guests on this series, actually series two, that has exactly happened to. And in therapy, I always say to people, whether you're going to stay together or whether you're going to split up, have the work, do the work, do the coaching, do the therapy, because you want to get to a point where you have completely purged. Relationships can absolutely come through infidelity. However, big caveat, there has to be absolute hands on table, ground zero work done by both. The person who has done the cheating has to be fully held accountable, fully apologetic, and allow their partner to purge and ask and get the answers to whatever they need to know. And often you'll find the person who's been cheated on does want to know all the sick and sordid details. There is an inherent fascination to have to know. And as painful as that can feel, I've had everybody that has said that they have come through that. As painful as that is, they've had to know. You know, were you thinking of me? Where was it? You know, what happened? Are they better than me? You know, all those horrible questions. Because in order to, and as I would say to a couple, if that is going to still be, you know, percolating, you can't move forwards because you will bring that through into your future. You have to have those days of reckoning, and it's hard and it's raw and it's emotional. But many couples get to that point where they either decide they cannot forgive, and that's fair enough, and they cannot move on, and they have to split. But they tend to be having at least purged all that and had the answers they need to hear to make that informed decision. So nobody's left uncertain as to why that relationship has ended. But then some people then work on that. And if that person that's cheated is true, you know, we've understood why, and there's, and this is a hard question in infidelity to ask the person who's been cheated on, well, what is your role in that? You know, because naturally a defensive response will kick in. Yeah. But we can all, this is why it's important to have it, because we all play a role in it. I'm not saying anyone's to blame, but it's all about figuring out, well, what is my role in this relationship? What ingredients does my relationship need in order to not just survive, but to thrive? And many couples do come through infidelity and are stronger than ever. However, they get everything in line that they hadn't prior to the affair.
You spend so long, Anna, supporting so many other people. Who supports you when you're having a wobble?
Oh my God, that's such a good question. Nobody, Wendy.
Oh, no, Anna.
I'm joking.
Don't say that.
That's a great question. I shouldn't joke and laugh about that because someone will think I'm being truthful, and I'm really not. I'm very lucky. I have a, you know, really good husband who's, you know, really supportive. And I have a really good family support, you know, by design. I live near my parents, my in-laws, and we have a very strong family unit. And my parents are the two of the wisest people I've ever known. They are kind and considerate and empathetic, but also very boundaried and very firm. And they are a terrific sounding board. And they'll tell me the stuff I don't want to hear. But you know what? I know I need to hear it. And then also professionally, I've also got some wonderful friends too. Louisa, who I do Luana the podcast with, she's, you know, I can tell her anything. She's a real confidant, as is Paul, who I do Celebs Go Dating. Paul and Tom, you know, they're very good friends of mine that I could be, you know, truly vulnerable with if I need to be. But also professionally, I have professional supervision, which is so important. All therapists have therapists. It helps keep us regulated. It helps keep us practicing well. So every month I dump everything onto my supervisors and have my own cathartic therapy session. And that is, again, I feel held by those people who are extremely talented at what they do and can see through me as well. I mean, one of my supervisors, Ray, I love him. He's my psychotherapy supervisor. I have two for two different disciplines. And if I go on, get online to do my therapy with him, the first thing he'll go is, "Oh, you look dreadful. You look tired." Well, I'm like, "Thanks for that." But he'll cut through. And he went, "Right, what's me?" Because they're trained to see what I see in people, you know, because they trained me. So, you know, they can cut through it. And they're like, don't BS me. What's me? And it's true. Then I go, "Oh, do you know what? Yeah, I had a bit of a Barney the other day with, you know, my other half. Or actually, I had a really tricky client this week. Or I'm finding my work schedule really, really, you know, difficult." And they can cut through it. And they can bring me back round. So this is why I'm such an advocate of therapy and coaching, because everyone needs it.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Well, Anna, this feels like this has been a little bit of a therapy session for me. I feel like I've got so much out of this. So thank you so much for joining us today on the Net Mamas podcast. It's been wonderful to chat to you.
Thank you, ladies. Honestly, this has been therapy for me too. And I think you're amazing at what you do. And thank you for just doing this amazing pod.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Net Mums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.